Hello, this is Chris with the Champaign News Gazette for Monday, January 15th. Begin today's reading on the front page. Judge quashed thousands of warrants. City legal staff unsure how to proceed on outstanding ordinance violations from Urbana. Champaign County's presiding judge recently did some major New Year's house cleaning. In a 15-word order issued January 5th, Judge Tom DeFontis quashed or set aside 2,547 outstanding warrants for people who have unresolved city or village ordinance violations, some issued as long ago as 2001. DeFontis said he intended to move to lighten the load of the staff at the Champaign County Jail who have to book those people once they are arrested. His action, however, has left city legal staffers wondering what the alternatives are. I have no idea why all these are quashed, said Champaign City Attorney Fred Stavens. The order also affects Urbana, Rantoul, Mahomet, and other smaller county towns, but Champaign has the majority of ordinance violation cases prosecuted in the Champaign County court system. Urbana City Attorney James Simon declined to answer questions, but said in an email that the city is looking into the matter and will address it as it deems appropriate and professional. Stavens said when his staff seeks a warrant after multiple failures by defendant to comply, they are doing what is allowed by Supreme Court rules. In each case, a judge issued a warrant for failure to appear. The city didn't do this on its own. The judges felt a warrant was appropriate. The move came as a surprise to Stavens and even to Sheriff Dan Walsh, who admitted that he frequently consults DeFontis and State's Attorney Julia Reitz on ways to keep the jail population manageable. DeFontis called Friday's census of 136 excellent. Walsh said that when he took office in December 2002, the number sometimes neared 300. Over the years and also in the last months, we have had various discussions with the judiciary about ways to be more efficient and to save the county's dwindling revenues. Recently, he and Chief Deputy Alan Jones took a look at how much time correctional officers spent booking ordinance violators. We found that between 2011 and the latter part of 2017, we processed 4,903 failure to appear or pay warrants for city ordinance violations. One individual had 16 such arrests during this period, and we had many with double-digit arrests for these matters. While we try to process these individuals quickly and get them back out, the county has the time and expense of this. We have to feed and provide medical and mental health care while while they are here, albeit for a short time, said Walsh, who added that the county is liable for something if something bad happens to those folks while in custody. From 2011 to 2017, there were an average of 700 bookings a year at about 45 minutes to an hour per booking. Some were done for offenses such as public urination and noise violations that don't even allow jail as a punishment. In my opinion, many of these people have mental and physical health issues and minimum financial resources to pay ordinance fines and costs. DeFontis agreed that the number of repeat ordinance violation offenders was part of his reason for quashing the warrants. This list went on forever. These aren't the people who are going to pay anyway, said DeFontis, who maintained that he is most concerned about safety. We're trying what we can to allow correctional officers to concentrate on what's important in that facility, which is keeping the residents safe. That booking area is like a triage area of an emergency room. Many of the people are there for mental health issues. These correctional officers have a lot to do. Booking people for city ordinance violations is simply a lower priority. I just don't think it's necessary at this point, DeFontis said. Stavens said city ordinance violations provide a lower impact method of preserving order in the community by giving police an alternative to arresting someone for a crime that could be a misdemeanor in state court. He noted that over the years, the city has kept thousands of cases out of court by allowing violators to pay a fine so that a case is never filed. We have been providing this option of diverting cases since 1988, when we originated this system to save court time and impact on that system, and to provide defendants a chance to avert a court record. The quashing of the warrants is not the same as dismissing the cases. It simply removes the mechanism to force people to court by arrest. The decision to dismiss the open cases would be up to each of the cities or villages. DeFana said he instructed his city court associate judges, Anna Benjamin and John Kennedy, to use their judgment when it comes to issuing warrants for failure to appear. He asked that they reserve warrants for people who threaten public safety, like the owner of a vicious dog running at large, or the owner of a building with code violations that make it unsafe to be in. Stavins said that if Walsh had a concern about the high number of ordinance violators being booked, he should have called his office or spoken to Police Chief Anthony Cobb. That didn't happen in advance of DeFantis's order. We cooperate with the county on many different levels, adding that we can always be better at what we're doing. Stavins said he sent DeFantis a note asking to meet with him about how his staff should go forward. We're trying to formulate some ideas about how to proceed. Also on the front page, keynote, we are all one nation, one people under God. The crowd gathered for this morning's 33rd annual Unity Breakfast in Urbana will hear from a former Martin Luther King Jr. scholarship winner who takes today's holiday seriously. Dr. King inspired me to understand that we are all one, said Shawana Lee, 33, a former three-sport standout at Champaign Central High School, now working as an account executive for Blue Cross Blue Shield in Dallas. We are all one nation, one people under God. I can do my part to encourage my fellow brothers to act as one as well. Ahead of her keynote address at the Vineyard Church, staff writer Tim Mitchell caught up with the 33-year-old Lee for a few questions. What will be the theme of your speech? It will be centered on the fruits of your labor, based on biblical scripture. I will tie it to the inspiration of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. I plan to talk not only about his work efforts in the civil rights movement, but also some of the things going on today and what we are doing now to get our country, communities, and families in a better place. How did receiving the MLK scholarship change your life? It afforded me the ability to offset the financial responsibilities of being an undergraduate at the University of Illinois, where I studied speech communication with an emphasis on business administration. It also provided me with the support of my community and the access for a wide range of networking opportunities that have allowed me to make a difference in my community. I attribute my success to a strong religious background, family support, and the academic support of my community. If Dr. King were alive today, what would you ask him? I would ask him the top three things that helped him to endure and persevere during a tumultuous time for our nation. What do you remember most from your time at Central, where in 2002 you were named the school's Female Athlete of the Year? I was the center on the Maroon basketball team. The game I will never forget was against Urbana during my junior year. At halftime, the coach pulled me into the locker room and chewed me out for only scoring 2 points in the first half. That was something rare for him to do. I consider myself an extremely coachable person. In the second half, I went out on the court and scored 32 points. I was a middle hitter for the volleyball team. I'll never forget losing in the sectionals. One time, the coach allowed me to speak to the rest of the team. I told the girls to play hard or get back on the bus. In the spring, I was the central shot put thrower. I went to the state finals in Charleston my senior year, but I didn't do so well at state because I was so nervous. I never again touched a shot, but after my appearance at state. Were there any teachers at Central who inspired you? Yes, there was a teacher named Mrs. Simmons who taught me one of my college preparation classes. She had each of us write out our goals for the next 5 years and for the next 10 years. Sure enough, 5 years later, she mailed me the first list, and 10 years later, she mailed me the second list. I was surprised to see how many of my goals I had accomplished. As a result, I believe that goal planning today affects your tomorrow. Do you think your generation is doing a better job embracing harmony among different races than previous generations? I do. There are great strides that have occurred with acceptance by my generation, but we still have a ways to go. My generation has had access to things like the internet that teaches a lot about race. I think my generation needs to put our outrage into action, and that is something I will touch upon in my speech. What was your first job? I worked the camera at the studios for WICD Television here in Champaign during the morning show and the midday show, and I managed the station's operations board. It was exciting. I started out as an intern and it developed into a regular job. You talked about having a strong religious background. What church did you attend growing up? Back then it was called the Alpha and Omega Church. Today it is called the Church of the Apostolic Authority in Champaign. How important is faith for a young person in today's world? It is pivotal. Faith is what separates the good from the great. Having a faith base is imperative. It will leverage you to make the best decisions in your life and to choose the right path. This spring, you'll launch your own event coordination and production planning company. Tell us about Swan 7 Productions. Because I had gained so much experience producing events for a sorority and being involved in event planning, I realized this was something I was really good at doing. I will plan all kinds of events, everything from weddings to galas to fashion shows around the world. I also have my first wedding booked for this April in Champaign. If you could live anywhere in the world, where would it be? South Africa. It is absolutely beautiful. I hope to go there someday to see the mountains and the oceans. I would love it. And finally, if you could change anything about the world, what would it be? I would teach everybody to love more. And from Savoy, those who served Marine under constant attack in Iraq, mortar fire was a daily threat to troops. Mortar attacks got to be a daily routine for Eric Coy, a Marine with two deployments to Iraq. Sergeant Coy, 36, went to Champaign Centennial High School, then started college at Parkland, all the time searching for what to do with his life. That's when he was approached by a Marine recruiter. It was 2000, and he would serve 6 years in the Marine Reserves, years he remembers for the camaraderie. Coy was first sent to boot camp in San Diego. The next year, on September 11th, he woke up and found out immediately about the terrorist attacks that cost 3,000 lives and knew where the nation was going to be headed. I remember 9/11 getting and thinking, oh boy, we're going to be heading out. The first of Coy's deployments to the Iraq-Kuwait border was the safer of the two. It was 2003. President George W. Bush signed the Iraq War Resolution in October 2002. The invasion began the next March, and Coy was there to see it. Right on the border, we could see the tanks lining up. It was unreal. The first night they dug in Kuwait, that meant little more protection than canvas tents. But Coy said there wasn't much danger around his unit. Not so in his second deployment from August 2004 to March 2005, mostly at Al Asad Air Base in western Iraq. We started expecting mortar attacks all the time. We had protective gear, but if it happened, it happened. The camp was under constant attack. One morning at a camp, I woke up to two or three mortar shells pretty close to where I'd been sleeping. One was a mere 50 yards away. Luckily, he said it was a dud. Gun battles also took place around the large base on a daily basis. After 9 months at Al Asad, he moved on to Fallujah, about 40 miles from Baghdad. Fighting was so intense there that by the end of 2004, 60% of the buildings suffered major damage. His unit worked on fortifications for UN troops there, building protective berms and doing other construction work, mainly in the center of the city. For a time after taking over control from the 82nd Airborne, the Marines faced running gun battles with insurgents. The Marines were able to use the firefights to test the strength of the insurgents in different sectors. During one stretch, Coy's unit worked in an abandoned school. In his 6 years in the Marine Reserves, he was able to continue working when he wasn't deployed. Coy is the regional manager for Papa John's Pizza. He said the Marine experience was one he'll never regret. I made a lot of friends. Once you're a Marine, you're always a Marine. He belongs to the Marine Corps League. My time in the Marines made some of the best memories in my life, said Coy, who is married with one child and two stepchildren. From the sports page, ruling the den, Urbana's lone senior reaches milestone mark. Grandma has got game. The mother hen ruled the roost. Each is a way of saying Lauren Cross tallied her 1,000th career point last week for the Urbana girls basketball team. Both of those names have been bestowed upon Cross, the former by Urbana coach Chris Menning, the latter by the athlete herself, in her role as the Tigers' lone upperclassman. They're both meant in good fun, but also show the impact Cross has had while transforming into a bona fide leader for her squad. That goes beyond Cross's scoring plateau, which she reached during last Thursday's Big 12 conference showdown at Normal West. Cross nailed a three-pointer in the second half to up her offensive output from 6-9 on the evening en route to 21 points by game's end. Immediately afterward, Menning called a timeout, much to his point guard's bewilderment. I was just thinking in my head, why did you call a timeout? We're on a run. I was confused, and then the man made the announcement that I hit my 1,000th point, and I was like, well, that's cool. And then I was like, oh, I did. Cross and Menning both described the brief celebration that followed as an emotional one for Cross, who was trying to guide the young Tigers through a 4-11 season. But that's on the heels of a 2016-17 campaign in which Urbana went 2-27 after 11 IHSA-enforced forfeits, resulting from two athletes not conforming to the organization's residency bylaws. For any kid that's given that much time to the sport, that's one of those checkbox list things that they hope to be able to achieve, said Menning, who in his second year heading the Tigers. I'm happy for her that she was able to have that memory. Cross said Menning's involvement with the Urbana program has provided a major boost on the court. The Barton, North Carolina College signee admitted she was kind of a hothead in her first two prep seasons, but Menning coming to town prior to Cross's junior year helped her focus that passion on improving, both as an individual and teammate. I was able to connect with him, said Cross, who was averaging nearly 11 points per contest, entering the affair with Normal West. He let me develop. My IQ got bigger, and I got the biggest thing, and I think the biggest thing is he helped me be a leader, and that surpasses everything. I feel being here and being with a team that looks up to you, that was a big thing. Menning believes it can be difficult for high schoolers to adapt to a position of leadership, but he said Cross has done so with aplomb, given she competes alongside seven girls who are in either their first or second year with the team. She's definitely the safety net for them, and I can't argue with that. We're trying to get her to embrace that and not be as frustrated with some of the growing pains of so much youth. For her to take pride in that and use that time to help build the people around her up, that's how the good leaders become great leaders, when they can raise the level of those around them up. Knowing she'd be the obvious elder stateswoman on this Urbana unit wasn't even the biggest challenge for Cross this season. Running plays from the point, she said, her natural inclination is to offer as many assists as possible. True to form, her 5.4 assists average is far and away the top local mark. But Cross has adapted, making herself a go-to option when the ball needs to swoosh the net. It was a big turnaround because I knew I needed to get to the board. I feel like I have to score because that's what you need. You don't get points unless you put the ball in the basket. During my individual workouts, I knew I had to incorporate that into my game, which is kind of hard now because I still want to be assist, 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 but sometimes you have to put the points up. That helped Cross speed to the four-figure production mark with five regular season games still on the docket. But she isn't satisfied with that accomplishment. There's at least one more mission Cross has her eye on before she heads east to compete in Division II college action. Of course it's been tough, and everybody talks about our losing, but I feel like we're getting prepared for the next round. Our goals are far more than winning against Champaign Central, Centennial, but especially winning a regional title. I want to do that before I leave. And from the business page, just asking, how much did that cold snap cost Ameren customers? Ameren didn't provide an exact number, but it's based on usage, and it said usage was up during the cold stretch. Ameren Illinois residential and small commercial customers used 5% more heating in December than last year, as temperatures dropped below freezing from December 24th to the end of the year. It remained below freezing until January 6th, reaching minus 14 degrees on January 2nd. Through the first 9 days of the year, Ameren says heating usage was up 25% from last year. While customers likely saw an increase in their bills thanks to the abundance of natural gas supplies right now, Ameren spokeswoman Marcellin Love said the cost of natural gas has declined over 30% since 2014. She also said there's been flat demand for natural gas and that Ameren purchases natural gas in the summer when prices are typically lower and stores it underground for use during the winter. Love encouraged customers to take steps to make sure their homes are heated efficiently, such as replacing furnace filters monthly, only heating necessary rooms, and turning ceiling fans on low in a clockwise direction to move warm air down from the ceiling. Heating and cooling typically account for over half of the energy use in a home, making it the largest energy expense for most homes. A time of change, new owners' plans unknown, four stores leaving. The Tuscola Outlet Mall is in a state of flux. It was sold last month to a New York-based real estate firm, and so far the new owners hasn't revealed its plans. Meanwhile, four stores are closing this month. Long Island-based Mason Asset Management bought the mall from New York City-based ADCO Group on December 15th for $6.25 million, according to the Douglas County Supervisor of Assessments Office. ADCO bought it in 2015 from Tanger for $19 million, according to the Douglas County Property Tax Lookup website. I don't know too much about them yet. We had a brief conversation with them, and we're waiting to have another, said Drew Hole, Tuscola's city administrator. We're always concerned about the viability of it. It's a big piece of the local economy, and we want to see that it remains viable. The city had a redevelopment agreement with the previous owners of the 260,000-square-foot outlet mall, in which ADCO received reimbursement for certain capital improvement expenses and tenant build-out. They did some things, but they did not take full advantage of the incentives or reimbursements that were available for them. ADCO could not be reached for comment. Hole expects the new owner will want to be assigned to that agreement. Mason Asset Management did not respond to multiple messages left with its president, Elliot Nason. The company, founded in 2010, owns 92 malls, shopping centers, and offices around the country, including at least 9 in Illinois. Among the closings, Corningware, Correll & Moore, which sells cookware and kitchen accessories, is closing. Vitamin World to shut its doors tomorrow. Clothing retailer J. Crew's last day will be January 27th. The same day, children's clothing store Oshkosh B'gosh plans to quit Tuscola. The latter, however, has plans for a new store at Champaign's Marketplace Mall with an eye on a March opening. An article by Ryan Pankow, Tropical Getaway, beat the winter blues with a tour of the U of I's greenhouses. Recently, on a cold, single-digit day, I paid a visit to the University of Illinois plant biology greenhouses. Since it was quite sunny and warm under the glass greenhouse roof, my mind drifted far from the snow and ice that was entrenched outside. Nothing could beat the tropical ecosystem created in the conservatory. It was like a vacation to the tropics right here in Urbana. And to top it all off, this facility is free and open to the public on weekdays. The greenhouses were built in 1988 to provide research and teaching opportunities. In 1991, the 2,000 square foot tropical landscape in the conservatory was completed. There, 8 smaller display rooms are open to the public and comprise an additional 1,600 square feet of space and contain various themed plant collections, such as the Jurassic Plants Collection featuring ancient plants from that period. Another favorite is the Wicked Plants Room, containing various plants with alarming characteristics, such as carnivorous plants that catch and consume insects. This fascinating collection of plants contains specimens from around the globe. There are more than 150 different plant families represented and more than 1,000 plant species to be viewed, most of which are clearly labeled. I could spend hours within these collections learning about new and different plants of various forms, such as vines, trees, and shrubs representing a diversity of ecosystems. The centerpiece of this collection is certainly the conservatory. This 37-foot-tall greenhouse space contains a great variety of tropical plants, from large banana trees to tiny aplicic plants that use intricate spaces on tree bark to grow and flower. These plant species grow in the tree canopy of rainforests, both temperate and tropical, around the globe. Unlike parasites such as mistletoe, they do not actually attach via tissue to the larger plant they call home, but rather find pockets or small fissures in bark to grow a specialized root system that absorbs the amply available rainfall. Nobody thinks of dinosaurs when they think of plants, but they are living plants today and that existed with the dinosaurs. Today, these plants are not common, but do still exist in various similar form to how the dinosaurs would have experienced them. In that way, they are a captivating window into the prehistoric world on this planet. The entire plant collection is open from 8:30 to 4:30, Monday through Friday. Black and her staff offer educational tours for all ages that may be scheduled in advance of your visit. In addition, the greenhouses offer events and plant sales throughout the year. And a letter to the editor. Fortunate to live in a generous community. On behalf of Daily Bread Soup Kitchen, we appreciate the many generous people in our community who made this year's backpack giveaway such a success. We always worry that we will have more people needing a backpack than we have backpacks. But once again, Champaign-Urbana came through. Over 900 backpacks were donated to this year's giveaway. Although December 15th was a bitterly cold day, our guests stood outside in line for hours to receive a backpack. We were able to give away more than 750 filled new backpacks in just 2 hours to very appreciative guests. The remaining backpacks will and have been given to guests who didn't receive a backpack. The gloves, hats, scarves, socks, snacks, etc. that filled the backpacks have been an especially welcome gift this very cold holiday season. All of us are fortunate to live in a generous and caring community. Ellen Harms and Pam Hangel, Champaign. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Champaign News Gazette for Monday, January 15th. Please stay tuned.